From NPR, it's the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country. From the top. This week from the New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, our lineup of outstanding young musicians includes a 17-year-old from New Jersey performing the first movement of the Debussy Cello Sonata, and 15-year-old roving reporter Emily Mayer will delve into that young cellist's colossal sleep issues in the first of a series of reports called Inside the Teenage Brain. Here's our host, renowned concert pianist Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks and welcome, everybody. We're back in our hometown of Boston this week, a city that, as most people know, just teems with kids going to college. And for that very reason, this place is really tantalizing for the kids on today's show because they're just dying to get into college. You see, all but two of the eight kids on our show today are high school seniors. We're going to be dealing with rampant, one could say virulent, senioritis here in Jordan Hall tonight. Senioritis is going to be the subject of the day. Charles, have you got senioritis, would you say?
Yeah, about 100 absences.
This year?
Yeah.
This semester, no doubt.
In 1 year, or maybe a semester, I don't know.
I think that sounds hardcore. Ladies and gentlemen, meet our first senior. Please welcome from Austin, Texas, 18-year-old Charles Yang. Charles, whatever senioritis you have, it certainly hasn't dampened your spirit, but as we know, what could? Tell everybody about this great opener you've brought for us.
We're going to play the Souvenir d'Amérique by Henri Vieton.
Oh, let's take it sous la tête. Okay. Thank you. Charles Yang, 18-year-old violinist from Austin, Texas, playing Henri Vieuxtemps' variations on Yankee Doodle, in case you missed it. Hot, man. Really hot.
Thank you.
Really
thank
enjoyed
you,
that
you.
With you. Charles, you were on our show 5 years ago, before you were even in high school. I mean, do you believe that, or do you remember it?
Yeah, I do remember. I was a fat Chinese kid, a little short buzzhead. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, and as anyone who's watched our series on PBS, they've seen you. You were a star, totally, a star on one of those episodes. But we know you quite well, but still, you fascinate us.
Thank
After
you.
All, there are so many sides to Charles Yang. First of all, there's Charles Yang, the Texan. What is it about you that makes you quintessentially Texan?
We love football. We love tailgating and barbecue. And just everything about Texas rocks.
True enough.
Yeah.
Weren't you the first Asian homecoming prince at your high school?
I was the first Asian homecoming prince. Thank you. It was a beautiful event.
That's right. Unfortunately, his accomplishments kind of go down from there, but that's
okay. Oh, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Chris.
Now, the other side, another side of Charles Yang. Charles Yang, the would-be pop singing star. When you were on our TV show, Charles, didn't you say you were going to try out for American Idol?
Yeah, I did say that.
So, fantastic. How did it go?
You raised me. Me up to more than I can be. You raise me up to more than I can be.
Charles, you rock. You rock.
Thank
you sound
you.
Even better than Josh Groban. And so they accepted you, of course. You're going to be on next season.
Well, I never really auditioned.
You didn't?
I just had too much homework. It was more important, you know?
Oh, God. Senioritis didn't
Senioritis.
Didn't give you the time off, I guess.
I guess not.
Hey, but you know, the Charles Yang I like the best, better than anybody on American Idol. Seriously, it's Charles Yang, the classical musician, and you're giving that a shot. Where are you going to school next year?
I'm going to Juilliard next year in New York. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And, you know, I want to pursue this career in music and... Yeah. Not that I have a choice or anything. It's
well, that's good to hear. That's always good
to
hear.
To do. Yeah, but I want to learn new things over there and live the big life and never
looking
go to
forward
sleep.
To living in New York as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Won't be getting much sleep. I'm
won't
imagine.
Be getting much sleep, but that's okay.
That's fine.
Yeah, more time for practicing.
Oh yeah, Charles. We expect great things from you.
Thank
Thanks
you
for being with us.
Thank you
great
very
to
much.
See you as always, Charles Yang. 18-year-old violinist from Austin, Texas, but not for long.
Go to our website, fromthetop.org, to hear Charles Yang's first performance on our show from back when he was 14. You can see his photo from back then, too. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jackkentcookfoundation.org, and that's Cook with an E. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. It just may be that Charles, our first performer, will become close friends and perhaps maybe even musical collaborator with the young woman who's just come on stage. She'll be at Juilliard next fall as well. Please welcome, from Glenview, Illinois, 18-year-old percussionist Molly Yeh. How about it, Molly? Are you psyched to hit the streets with Charles Yang next year?
Well, I'm certainly psyched to hit the streets of New York, maybe not with Charles. Kidding. Charles is cool. I'm kidding.
I'm not sure New York is ready for you too, actually, but tell everybody what you're going to play on the marimba.
I'm going to be playing Michael Burrett's October Night, the second movement.
Thank you.
Molly Ye, 18 years old, from Glenview, Illinois. Molly, you get such wonderful clarity and such dynamic range at the same time on this instrument. I mean, it's just uncanny. It's beautiful. It was beautiful.
Thank you.
We mentioned that you're going to Juilliard next year, but your audition there was not an easy ride.
Yeah, it was a tough audition. It was probably, I think it was my worst, actually, because I just put so much pressure on myself to do incredible. And I walked in, and the first thing they had me do was sight reading. And it really caught me off guard, because in my previous auditions, I really didn't have to do any sight reading at all. And so I did my sight reading, and it wasn't too hot. And I looked over at the teachers, and they were all just kind of sitting there like, oh, whatever. and then after the sight reading, I had to go to the timpani in an interval. And I totally messed that up. I thought it was a perfect fourth, but it was really a perfect fifth. And I was so frustrated. And by the time I actually got to play my music, I just couldn't feel the energy. I wasn't feeling it. It was not my best. So I pretty much just came out of the audition and started sobbing.
No.
Yeah.
So you really felt that bad. What do you do in that situation to make yourself feel better?
Well, luckily, my best friend in the whole entire world, Nathan, he had his audition right after me. And so after his, we went and we ordered so much greasy Chinese food. and then we spent tons of money on Fifth Avenue shopping.
What did you get?
I don't even remember. It was just pointless
retail.
Little things that just seemed cool at the time.
Retail therapy, in other words. Nathan is somebody that you have known for a while, a friend of yours?
Yeah. Well, I met him last summer at Tanglewood, and we became best friends almost instantly. He's my other half.
You seem to have no problem having friends who are boys, and you were asked to the prom in this really nice sort of stalkerish way. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, one morning, it was kind of early, my mom came into my bedroom, and she was like, Molly, wake up, you have to come look at our driveway. So I woke up, I was kind of groggy, I walk outside, and on my driveway, written in sidewalk chalk, is, Molly, will you go to prom with me? From Michael.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, has prom happened? Have you
yeah,
been?
Yeah, it just happened, and it was so much fun.
So prom was great. So how's your case of senioritis, would you say?
Probably the worst case in history. I can't even handle it. I literally go to school, sit in my chair, and watch the clock go by. It's terrible.
But seriously, here you are about to go to college, and you've spent a huge amount of your childhood and your teenage years alone in various practice rooms, working on music all by yourself. What's kept you going all of these years?
I think my favorite part about performing, and the thing that helps me to stick with it, is all the people that I meet, all the musicians that I get to collaborate with.
You lend a great energy to the community that you're in.
Thank you.
And thank you for being with us.
It's been
great having you, Molly. Molly Ye, 18-year-old percussionist from Glenview, Illinois. We have another senior in high school joining us. He's one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists. Please welcome, from Plainsboro, New Jersey, 17-year-old cellist Nico Olarte Hayes. Nico, like Molly, we were just talking about prom season. Did you ask your date by doing something like riding on the sidewalk or anything like that?
No, I did something a little bit less stalkerish. Or maybe not. I broke into this girl's locker. And I left a note in Korean, because she speaks Korean, saying, will you go to prom with me? And I left a little rose. And then the next day, I got rejected.
Oh. So. She missed out. Are you going to the prom anyway?
Yeah, I'm going with a friend.
Have a great time. We're going to have a great time right now. While I get back at the piano, why don't you tell everybody what we're going to play together?
We're going to play the first movement of Debussy's Cello Sonata.
Thank you.
Nico Olarte Hayes, 17 years old, our cellist from Plainsboro, New Jersey, playing the opening movement of Debussy's Cello Sonata, and a very soulful rendition, I must say. Has such a great sense of narrative and a real singing tone throughout. Really nice to do that with you, Nico. Thank you so much. You chose the cello for a really bad reason.
Well, I initially played the violin. I started when I was 3. And then when I was 6, my mom asked me one day, Nico, how would you like to play the cello? And I had no idea what the cello was. So I asked her what it was, and she didn't tell me, but the only thing she said was, you get to sit down while you play. So obviously, I started playing the cello immediately.
Yeah, right, so your mom had a good justification. Yeah. As it happens, you're a guy who likes things to be justified, I mean, good spending of your time, purposeful. Describe your personal philosophy from that standpoint.
Yeah, like you said, I believe that everything one does should have a reason. I see a lot of people just doing things because they think they should, or because, especially where I come from, my school and stuff, just to get into college, and they do all these activities, and I've narrowed my life down to very few things. I do very few things. I just do music and academics, and I'm passionate about both, and I really don't see a point in, you know, doing something else just because I think I should.
I mean, so you're not time serving. I mean, you're actually studying and learning about what you're passionate about. What branch of academics are you really passionate about?
I think I would have to say the sciences.
Mm-hmm. So your life is, in that case, sort of simple. I mean, you do just music and academics that you've really chosen for yourself. I can barely just do music. You know, I just don't have time. Do you find they conflict, or do you find that, you know, you've scheduled your time wisely?
Well, I definitely don't think they conflict in terms of the activities themselves. I think they complement each other quite well.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of two halves of me, and they balance each other out.
So it doesn't sound like you're having much of your senioritis, of, you know, zoning out, or are you?
Well, at the same time, the second part of your question, they do both take up a lot of time, and it's really hard to balance the two as well as they go together.
Yeah,
and I definitely have a bit of senioritis. I waste time until, you know, odd hours of the night, and then decide to practice, and you know, we're too late.
But you do it. I mean, but for instance, you know, you're trading in next year for an even more demanding program than that, what you're doing. You're doing, what, a double sort of program?
Yeah. Next year, I'll be coming here to Boston to do a 5-year program between Harvard University and New England Conservatory.
Okay.
So
that's a nice one. So you're going to be, congratulations, by the way. I mean, that sounds like a fantastic program. You're going to be here in Boston, far away from mom's water bottle. How are you going to wake up in the morning?
Yeah, my mom's water bottle. Well, I guess I should explain. I have, some trouble waking up in the morning about every day. And my mom's gotten tired of it. And so this year she decided to try a new thing to wake me up. She sprays me with water in the morning.
So, Nico, how do you wake up when your mom's not around with the water bottle?
On those days, I try to set as many alarm clocks as I can around my bed. I use my personal alarm clock. I use my sister's. Yes, sorry, Sandra, I go into your room. I use my mom's, and I usually try to get my mom to call me on the house phone and maybe the cell phone.
But even this sometimes works or doesn't work?
I'd say actually like 80% of the time it does not work.
And so you sleep till when?
on those days I wake up around like 1 or 2.
That sounds like senioritis, but this worries me, Nico. That's why we asked 15-year-old roving reporter Emily Mayer to look into this issue of teenagers and their very problematic sleep habits.
From NPR, it's another installment of Inside the Teenage Brain. Here's roving reporter Emily Mayer.
To sleep, perchance to dream, But just how much sleep do teenagers really need in order to have enough restful time dreaming? I put that question to Dr. Christopher Landrigan, assistant professor and sleep disorders expert at Harvard Medical School and research director and pediatrician at Boston's Children's Hospital.
Teenagers need about 9 hours of sleep per night, but in our society, on average, they tend to get about 2 hours less than that.
Case study, Nico Alarte Hayes, 17, from Plainsboro, New Jersey. Nico, how much sleep do you get in a school night?
I don't know. I get way less than I'm supposed to, though. But I'm constantly napping everywhere, in hallways, in practice rooms, sometimes in classes at school.
I spoke with Mr. Charles Ashton, who teaches math at West Windsor Plainsboro High School South, the school Nico attends. I asked Mr. Ashton if he's ever caught Nico sleeping in school.
As Nico's teacher, I have caught him sleeping, and I think it might be a bigger problem than what I see in my own class. Because when he is awake, he's not doing my work, he's doing other classes' work. So I think he's probably sleeping in those other classes as well. You know, so I think he's got a sleeping issue. But the tricky thing is, it's hard for me to really come after him, because every time I give him a test or a quiz, he, like, gets the highest grade in the class.
Actually, one time I fell asleep in the library and slept through about 3 or 4 classes and a fire drill. Librarians found me, and I think they thought I was dead. I'm serious.
Again, Dr. Christopher Landrigan.
One of the issues is that teenagers often don't have a regular schedule. As biologic creatures who have grown up on a 24-hour clock, we are adapted to operating by day and sleeping at night. If we are trying to sleep by day or spreading our sleep in small bouts throughout the 24-hour cycle, the quality of that sleep is much impaired.
It's true. I don't have a set schedule, although I know I should. I come home after school and crash until like 10 p.m. sometimes. And when I wake up, I'm facing 8 hours of homework and practicing, so I just grind on.
And that's a recipe for dysfunctional sleep patterns. But what about this boy's family? His mother, Mercedes, describes her anguish.
Oh, my God. This is Nico's sleeping habits in the past year or so have been, like, the one source of aggravation in my life. They're horrible. And trying to get him up, it's impossible. I tried waking him up in Spanish, in English. I tried to wake him up lovingly, in a mean way. I bring him breakfast in bed. Sometimes I get him to get up, to wake up, he eats breakfast. Next thing I know, he's back asleep. He's paying me back for not aggravating me for 17 years. I just worry when he goes to college, who's going to wake him up? So, I don't know.
Stress for the family and utter exhaustion for the teenager. Dr. Landrigan, are these walking zombies just tired, or are there consequences?
Yes, there are consequences to teenagers' lack of sleep. And there's no question that sleep loss impairs academic performance for teenagers. There have been a couple of studies that have demonstrated poorer grades for those who sleep less as opposed to those who sleep more.
Well, not true of this kid. After all, he's done well enough to get into your little university next year. But I take your point. One last question. Do we know why teenagers like to stay up so late, even though they need a lot more sleep than adults?
Well, we know that teenagers undergo a shifting in their biologic clock during adolescence that makes them inclined to stay up later and sleep in later than either young children or adults. And when they are going to bed at a normally biologically determined time, say at 11 or 12 or even 1 o'clock, and then are being forced by school schedules to get up at 6 in the morning or even earlier in some cases, they are getting insufficient sleep. The phenomenon is clear-cut. There's no question that their clocks are shifted to a later time frame, but the reason for this is unclear.
And so, the teenage brain, as always, remains a mystery. Reporting from Boston, this is Emily Mayer.
Very nice job, Emily. Thanks for that report. Nico, get some rest, man. You'll need it.
Thank you.
Anyway, meanwhile, thanks for being with us.
Thank
Bravo
you.
Bravo for the WC. Nico Alarte Hayes, 17 years old, our cellist from Plainsboro, New Jersey.
Welcome back to the Radio Showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, From the Top. This week, we're coming to you from New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. New England Conservatory, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Joining us now is an outstanding teenage string quartet from right here at New England Conservatory's Preparatory Division. They are Audrey Wright and Alana Tonetti-Tiepo, 17-year-old violinists, James Larson, our 18-year-old violist, and Ji-Un Lee, our 16-year-old cellist. They call themselves the Elysium String Quartet. Please welcome them. We have Alana at the microphone. Alana, you and Ji-Un are our only juniors on today's program, so I thought we'd ask one of you to introduce the movement you're going to be playing. Would you do the honors?
Yes. We'll be playing the first movement of Mendelssohn's String Quartet, Opus 13.
The Elysium String Quartet, our violinists, 17-year-old Audrey Wright and Alana Tonetti-Tiempo, our violist, who's 18-year-old James Larson, and our cellist, 16-year-old Ji-Un Lee. We're going to talk to Audrey and Jim for a little bit. That was I love the way that Allegro ends. You know, you as the first violinist sort of get the last word, and the other guys have to finish the movement. It's like you've run off stage already at that point. It's a great dramatic moment. Nicely done. And James, nice setting of the that sort of tolling quality in the adagio. Nicely done. Thanks. On the viola there. Audrey, sometimes I hear you have to translate for our friend Jim here. What's that about?
Yes, well, sometimes Jim gets really excited when he speaks. He's very enthusiastic, so he gets ahead of himself, and sometimes I have to decipher what he's talking about. So
funny, he doesn't look Irish. But if I need your help, can I ask you to chime in?
Yeah, I'll try.
Jim, I understand you are the one within the quartet always arguing with your coach, Jonathan Kohler. Is that true?
Well, that's kind of true. I mean, our coach is a very charismatic person with very strong opinions, a clarinetist, actually. And, you know, he has very strong opinions about what he wants to do in our pieces. And, you know, sometimes I just like to make sure he can back up and all of his ideas. So I remember there was he has this motto. He says, most people are mostly wrong most of the time, except for himself, who's right all the time, you know.
So I would imagine you would want to push back against
exactly,
something like that.
Exactly. You know, yeah. We got to test it out, see if what he's saying is true. So we were playing, I think, the Prokofiev second string quartet third movement, and the beginning opens up lots of very specific articulations. And, you know, Jonathan always says, you know, follow exactly what the composer says. He's smarter than you are. So there was an articulation where Jonathan actually wanted me to do something differently than Prokofiev. So I was like, well, this I'm in a conundrum. I don't know what to do, you know. Should I do what Prokofiev says or what you say? Because, I mean, you're always right, but then I'm supposed to do what the composer says.
Audrey, so, does this make for awkward coaching sessions, tension, or is it all in good fun?
At times, I mean, sometimes we'll be sitting there in a coaching, and Mr. Kohler will say, you know, he'll tell us to do something, and then Jim will say, well, wait, but Mr. Kohler, didn't you? And then so Gian and Alana and I will be like, oh, here it goes
Take
again.
Five,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. But no, it's totally in good fun.
I understand.
So.
One of the disagreements you were having was over the value of tempo between that opening adagio section we heard and then going into the allegro in this Mendelssohn.
Yes.
Audrey, is there an idea behind that?
Well, usually what happens is the violist will take the 32nd notes at the end of the adagio slower, really slow, you know, mm-hmm. at a nice adagio tempo, mm-hmm. and then they'll accelerando mm-hmm. To the allegro section.
And
but
they become the 16th.
Right,
the
and they become then. The 16th. Right. But there is no accelerando written actually mm-hmm. in the part, so we play the adagio rather fast to be half the tempo of the allegro.
Oh, so there's a real mathematical sort yeah. of
so that way
the
32nd
proportion.
Notes then immediately become the 16th
right.
notes, and
right.
it's
Thank
kind
you,
of it's
Jim.
A classical technique that many yeah. composers use, and I mean it seems I mean
sensible.
Mendelssohn used this before, so yeah. there's no reason not to. And you know, as a clarinetist, Mr. Kohler, he really looks at everything very objectively, and. Mm-hmm. That's how he approaches it from a musicological standpoint.
It sounded like a very good solution, though. I mean, a lot of people see adagio and think, oh, slow, slow, slow. Adagio just means it's Italian for, what, at ease or easily.
Right.
Or Yeah, so it's, mm-hmm. it was a very easily assimilatable performance. I mean, it was very organic, the way you were doing it. So you guys, you're both seniors. What are you doing next year, Jim?
I'm actually going to go to Vanderbilt University in Tennessee. I'm from the South.
So, from the South, right. Yeah.
So I'm going back down to the South, and I'm hopefully going to major, I think, right now in viola performance, and right now I think biochemistry. So.
Oh, awesome.
So you know, just kind of get a wealth of, you know, two different worlds at the same time. So.
Fantastic. Good for you. And Audrey, how about you?
I'm staying right at home here at New England Conservatory.
Good for you. All right, you guys. Great having you, and great being with you, and good luck next year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Audrey Wright, 17-year-old violinist from Harwich, Massachusetts, on the Cape, and James Larson, 18-year-old violist from Atlanta, Georgia, studying now at Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at npr.org/podcasts. Each year, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation present 25 performers of exceptional musical ability, outstanding academic potential, and financial need with the $10,000 Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award. Learn more at FromTheTop.org. Chris.
Our final performer is an outstanding 18-year-old pianist from Tokyo, studying now in the U.S. at the Walnut Hill School in nearby Natick, Massachusetts. Please welcome Gen Tomuro. Welcome here today, Gen Tomuro. Gen, you have two distinct sides to your personality. Yes. What would you describe them
as?
Well,
two distinct sides. I am from Japan, and I would say that I have both my Japanese side and American side show at different times. My American side is the fact that I'm outgoing when I'm with friends, and I'm very loud and foolish, when my Japanese side comes out, it's usually when I'm meeting someone new or I'm very reserved and people don't see my loud side.
Save it for later, yes. Right? It's a good way to go. And you're about to add a third nationality to emulate after you graduate. Where are you going to go for school?
Yes, I'm going to Paris, France next year to study at a school called École Normale de Musique. Mm-hmm.
You've been to France before?
Yes, I've been to France many times.
I'm anxious, actually, to hear this great playing that appealed to this fellow who recommended you over to the École Normale, yes, Philippe Entremont.
Yes. Last summer, I attended the program Fontainebleau, there the music director was the world-famous Philippe Entremont, mm-hmm. and I had many lessons with him, and we both worked very well together. Mm-hmm. So he said, why don't you come to Paris next year? And I've always wanted to go to Europe, and my family's always wanted me to go to Europe as well. So we thought it was a great idea. So
it's a very exciting piece. Would you please introduce
it? Yes, I'll play Francis Poulenc's Caprice Italien.
All right. We've had very little Poulenc on this show. Very excited about this. This is going to be a fun way to end our show. I want to thank all of our young performers today and congratulate all our graduating seniors. Go out and make some noise. Thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And again, you can now take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. The music producer is Tom Vinieri, and the tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Kim Razeman, and our technical director is Barrett Willett, with Francis X. Coakley, Dan Hallis, and John Servies. Lighting designed by Anne Dressbach and Caleb Magoon. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is made possible in part by the Massachusetts Office of Travel and Tourism. Our program is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.